Alrighty. So I guess we'll get started. Shadows Fall is currently on tour with Hatebreed, Dying Fetus, and Contortionist, just so all the listeners know what's up.
Yeah.
And so for this last stretch of the tour, you guys are missing bass player Paul. Of course, I guess the whole tour with it.
Yeah, Paul's he had his first kid in September, so he's pretty much laying low for a while. We're not even sure what the future holds, because real life comes first. So Ed, he's been with us since May, really, so he's pretty much the full-time guy these days. And then John is filling in for Anthrax for these last just three shows. We have Felipe from Acaro filling in on lead guitar. So, we had to patch things together. And it's funny because then last tour, Jason got sick with pancreatitis, so we had a fill-in drummer for like those few weeks. So it's been a hectic. We haven't had a lineup change in over a decade, and then within two months, we have like three. It's crazy. But mostly because of circumstances that just came up. The dudes have been filling in, have been awesome, and helped us out, or we would have had to cancel the Killswitch tour and the Hatebreed tour. So,
right. So
it all worked out.
And Jason's also filled in with Anthrax, so that's...
When Charlie was sick, and then when he got hurt, he filled in, and then also unfortunately when his mom passed away, he filled in, and then when his son was born, he filled in. So we're kind of like the Anthrax minor league for when they need someone to step up. So, and the thing with John, he's filling in for the next few months, and we didn't have anything coming up after this, so for him to not be able to do that just for the last three shows, was kind of unfair to him and Anthrax. So if we could find someone to fill in, it worked out that we didn't have to cancel these three shows.
Totally.
So.
Now, with bringing people up to speed with the songs, because you guys aren't doing Nirvana songs or Ramones songs, they're pretty complicated. Is that stressful kind of?
It's not like you said, I'll learn this little 2-minute pop song that follows, verse, chorus. It's they got to learn all the little turnarounds, and especially Felipe's playing the leads. He's playing John's solos, and he learned them pretty much, dead on. He'll add a little of his own flavor in, but him and John would sit on Skype and then in person and learn them. Even while we were on the road traveling, Felipe was still hitting up John for questions about certain parts, and he was able to learn them on all of it. It was even harder on Willis, who's our drum tech, had to fill in for Jason when he got sick.
Wow.
But that we literally had a week's notice. That was even more difficult. So he was learning it on his headphones on a drum pad in the back of the bus, just learning it until the shows came. So that was even more hectic. And the thing is too, a drummer, if he screws up, everything stops.
Yeah.
It's definitely these guys showed that they're true like musicians though, to be able to learn this stuff as quickly as they did.
All right. Now, the latest album, Fire from the Sky, in stores now, was one of the best metal albums of 2012, definitely. And you're really consolidating your strengths, getting everything tighter and lean, catchy, and the vocals especially, because I love the harmonies. I'm a Bad Religion fan myself, so I'm a sucker.
That's my stage shirt for this tour, has been a Bad Religion shirt.
Good call.
Yeah.
I'm such a sucker for those three-part harmonies, so keep them up.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But so from what I've heard, though, for the album, it took a lot of time to demo and a time off touring and everything. And really agonizing over a lot of it. Did the extra time really benefit?
Yeah, definitely. Usually our schedule's been we get off the road, we go right into writing mode and hit the studio as soon as we can because we were going to be back on the road. This time we knew because of Paul's kid and a few other things that we were going to be taking more time anyway, so we're like, let's take it to really, really work on not just writing, but just the demos and all the pre-production, so when we hit the studio, things have been, are ready just to lay down, and we already have a real idea of where they're at. And Adam D was involved right from the beginning because, actually, it's funny, Matt was filling in for Times of Grace on bass and was playing these songs for Adam in their infancy stage. So he was really involved in how they evolve, were changing. So when we hit the studio, we were able to really maximize the time there and focus more on great performances, great tones, as opposed to rewriting shit or rearranging. So.
Yeah.
It definitely helped.
All right. Now, as you mentioned, with Adam D producing the album, I know he worked with the first album of the band before it predates.
Sort of, barely. Okay. Even though it was at his old studio where we actually did the drums for this new one. When they did Sunrise for the Sky, when Phil Labonte was still a singer, I think he was involved in an engineering kind of way back then, because this was early on. This was Adam hadn't really started even producing records back then. I think it was '96 or something when they did that record or something. But he's, we've known Adam since high school days. Matt and John really grew up with him and even played in some bands with him. So he's, that whole scene between us and Killswitch Engage, we're pretty kind of brother bands, So working with him was great. But he's also just stepped up his game as a producer over the last 10 years to such a huge level that to me he's one of the top guys in the rock and metal world for making records these days. So it was awesome to work with him. It was also real comfortable because of the familiarity and just the fact that we were doing a lot of stuff at his house, so everyone was, you know, at home. Mm-hmm. So you weren't, you know, kind of dislocated from where your normal life. So it was awesome.
It certainly seemed like it would make sense. I was thinking you've worked with so many good producers in the past, but
yeah, it's scheduling wise is why we actually never ended up with Adam. Also, we had a great relationship with Zeus for a long time. Sure. It was just a matter of he was going to be home. We knew that, so we locked him in early on. And also, since him and Matt were touring together, they were able to like kind of brainstorm a bunch, which was really, you know, it's rare you get a producer who can spend that much time on a project because they were just happened to be together touring. So it really made a big difference.
Cool. Okay. Now, from what I understand, Matt and John are doing some production for other bands and getting into that world a little bit.
Matt, definitely, big okay. time, is he produced the new Trumpet the Harlot record, a band that we've taken out a few times, and just done a lot of local demos and stuff like that. His studio is where we did all our pre-production for the last two records, actually. And he just keeps expanding and, you know, just learning more. And these days, in especially the music industry being as shot as it is, you have to find, you know, definite other income when you're at home for off the road and things like that. And, you know, if you can stay involved in music to do that, it's even better. So
even if it's just in a money-saving capacity, with his production, do you think maybe someday down the line he would take on producing an album?
Possibly. I mean, if he's definitely getting better and better and more comfortable with the technology side of things, that's a lot of it these days, is really learning the new plugins and how, you know, and how to maximize all that stuff. And because after that, you end up recording, like I said, we did most of this record in Adam D's house,
yeah,
besides the drums. So his studio is already up to par with whatever you would need professionally to get a quality product. And he, like I said, he ran pretty much most of our pre-production sessions. So yeah, at some point it would be great to not have to pay an outside studio or anyone else, you know. I'm sure he'd find a way to weasel out some stuff out of us.
Sure, sure.
You gotta pay for my electric bill, you know.
All right. Now, we know they have certain resources thanks to the success of compilations like Kids Bop and other things, but besides that, what is it about Razor and Tie that attracted not only you, but also a lot of your metal peers like All That Remains, Hatebreed, Norma Jean, The Sword?
Yeah, you know, they just kind of went on a signing spree of really hard rock and heavy metal, and I think what it is they realize it's one of the few markets that the fans, even though obviously sales are down number-wise and percentage-wise over the years, metal fans still really support the artists more than a lot of other genres.
Yeah.
Because they want to not only help the band, they want the artwork and the lyrics and just the whole packaging, and they also know metal bands put a little more into that than, say, your average pop record or hip-hop record. So I think they realize that that's there. But also, because of, like you said, Kids Bop and all those other compilations they do, they can still afford to develop a band and actually promote them to, whether it's like All That Remains to mainstream radio, or you know, a band like us to help us with the touring, because that's where, you know, more where our world is. They're able to do that, whereas a lot of other labels, they just don't have the income, right, these days to do that. And they're either signing things they know will sell a certain amount of records and they know they can make their money, or they take a shot on a band but don't give them like anything, you know. So Razor and Tie is really one of the last few kind of comfortable labels to be with, because times is hard out there for record labels.
Definitely. I mean, I was thinking Razor and Tie is one of the busy and aggressive ones, and maybe Rise Records, maybe Epitaph. But
yeah, you know, some of the smaller ones or the indies that have been around for a long time, like the Century Medias, the Epitaphs, they've figured out their little niche and how it works best for them. They've still, even those companies have had to streamline,
sure,
but not to the extreme of like, we were the Atlantic Records when we signed in 2006. There was like, you know, a few hundred employees in the New York office, not to mention, you know, company-wide. Now there's like 70 people total, you know, like it's extreme. Whereas the smaller labels that were already keeping a lot of stuff in-house and, you know, doing things a little more streamlined, were slightly more prepared for the crash.
Yeah.
but it still have had to adjust, you know. But they're also willing to adjust. That's
sure.
The big thing, you know. Small labels have always been more nimble.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's see. Over the years, the band has covered Pink Floyd, Dangerous Toys, Only Living Witness, Leeway, Cro-Mags, Ozzy, Nuclear Assault. Any other covers down the line?
Yeah, you know, we always like to... This time, we didn't record any during the album session because we actually had more material than we needed, which, again, it was probably the extra time, but that never happens for us. Okay. You know, normally, a lot of times, the covers are like, well, they need a bonus track for Japan or for Best Buy. We're like... Shit, you know, we don't have any music, you know. So, but we actually have the drums to I think at least three cover tunes that are ready to go that we were planning on recording. That we'll probably do. We were even talking about doing like a small EP during the downtime that we're taking recently because. Since we do have the time, we might as well, you know, maybe write an original or two and then like two covers and do just like a little digital only release, mostly because people's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, so we might as well remind them like, hey, we're still here. And also, since we aren't going to be on the road for a good chunk of the rest of this year, kind of a good way just to kind of keep the ball, you know, the momentum going from this last album. So we'll see. I don't want to tell you what they are because that'll ruin the surprise.
Yeah, no problem. Totally. Yeah, the other question was just like, is there any more fallout from these extra songs that you've written?
Yeah, you know, fallout was kind of a cool thing because we had some like, they weren't necessarily unreleased, they just were kind of unfinished, you know, ideas that were around, but by the time we got in the studio, just didn't have time to really give them all they deserved. And some were actually just riffs that had been in the riff bag forever that were like, where is this gonna land, you know? And then, you know, since there was like five original tunes, we were like kind of rounded off with the covers to make it like at least a full like kind of release. Mm-hmm. So I see us more instead of something necessarily like that, more like just a little like, you know, four or five song digital release that's, you know, maybe two songs that have been kind of floating around and then a few covers, you know, just it's something cool, you know, something cheap for fans who can just, you know, can give them a taste of some new ideas.
Good. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right, now, going back in time a little bit on The War Within, the song The Power of I and I, were you particularly listening to a lot of Bad Brains at the time?
I've always listened to a lot of Bad Brains pretty much all the time. And I listen to a good amount of reggae and things like that. I've always been, you know, just intrigued by the Rasta philosophy and just a lot of that music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's at least one tune in that vein pretty much on every record. Okay. So yeah, you know, Power of I and I, there's Dread Uprising on Threads of Life. Yeah. War on Retribution was a Bob Marley cover. Yeah. So you know, so I always gotta slip in. Jah's gotta make his way on the record somewhere.
There you go.
So.
Alright, let's see. Now, you've got a side project with Mike D from Killswitch and some Overcast buddies, mm-hmm. Death Ray Vision. And I saw that you released an EP, self-released it, Get Lost or Get Dead.
Yep.
You'll be releasing a full-length album on Bullet Tooth.
Yes.
Let's see. For those
who... We're going to re-release that EP through Bullet Tooth on a vinyl version that'll come with a download, obviously. But we're just psyched to finally... Like, that was originally just going to be a 7-inch or a demo anyway, mm-hmm. but we're like, we'll just put it online. You know, this is easier. Yeah. So now I'm psyched that it's kind of like, boom, have a physical release. And then the LP is done. It's being mastered right now. We're not sure of release date. Because of the Killswitch record coming out soon, Mike's going to be really busy.
Sure.
And Bullet Tooth kind of wants to at least do like a record release party because we can't tour the way a lot of other bands do just since we're kind of more of a side project. But we want to kind of, you know, at least give it its proper like push. So we don't know the date yet, but it came out killer, man. It's like 13... new tunes, they're all really fast, aggressive, like kind of minute and a half hardcore tunes. Okay. Speaking of Bad Brains, there's a lot of Bad Brains influences, a lot of Cro-Mags, old kind of hardcore like Integrity and Ringworm. It's a lot of the stuff that we all, as a group, grew up listening to, mm-hmm. But kind of taking it into the modern world, you know, just from our experiences and progression as musicians. So it's been a lot of fun, man. I wish we could dedicate even more time to it, and who knows, in the future we may, but right now we're just glad that we're able to get these songs recorded and out. So.
Totally, okay. Now, you also have another side project, a little Transient. I guess it sounds like a palate cleanser from being all the metal and hardcore and all that stuff, a little more ambient. Yeah, are there any recording?
We recorded a ton of stuff. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to jam with those dudes in a while because I actually moved to St. Louis, where my wife's from. Mm-hmm. But we do stay in touch. They've been jamming as a three-piece. Originally, I was the drummer, and me and my friend Tim Hayes were just writing songs together that were very, like, you know, no distortion, just like very ambient, you know, spiritualized meets like Pink Floyd kind of vibey stuff. And then once we started kind of getting a little more serious and playing some shows, I actually switched to rhythm guitar and started writing a lot of music on guitar. Mm-hmm. And that way they could also, we found a drummer and they could play like as a three piece while I was out of town. So we'll still email some like tunes back and forth and things like that. But they're still keeping it going in the Boston area. And hopefully I'll be able to jam with a bunch. It's one of those things when I'm home, I just kind of jump back in and right. just jam with them. So it's cool. But yeah, definitely very different vibe from the Shad stuff.
Okay, cool. Let's see. Now, of course, basketball. I know you love the Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
With Rondo injured and Barbosa tore his ACL, of course, yeah. What do you think the Celtics should do? Keep the team intact or rebuild?
Well, at this point, KG's got a no trade clause and he's not going anywhere.
Right.
Trading Paul Pierce, you're never going to get the value for what he means to a Celtics team. Like, right. I understand, like, the premise of it, but he's, you know, that dude is lifelong Celtics. He's got 2 years left on his contract or a year or whatever. Like, you got to let him ride it out. But yeah. They may do something. I don't think they should. Barbosa going down changes it a little bit because they've been on fire for the last seven, eight games since Rondo went down. Mm-hmm. But that's a big loss right yeah. there. So I feel like the names have been floating around there for backup point guards, you know, the Delonte West talk, and even Sebastian Telfair's name came up. Yeah. I'm like, woof. Mm. I was like, this is what we got left. I was like, it's going to be rough. I didn't know if they were championship team to begin with this year anyway, so I say you just ride it out because I feel like they can make some noise in the playoffs if they can get in. But, man, the ACL thing, it's just crazy. It's like two guards down in a row. It's tough.
That hurts the depth a little bit.
Yeah, and that was their key, was their depth at the beginning, so... So we'll see. They were definitely playing inspired after Rondo. I love Rondo as a player, but he's got to be a tough dude to deal with because, like, he just seems like a mean dude.
I guess if he's on your side, that's fine.
Yeah, but I think even in the locker room, I don't think those dudes even like him. But I love his game, so. But we'll see what happens.
He got a little bit of a shot now, so that helps.
Yep.
All right, let's see. Now, after the tour, you said, what else is on the horizon?
We're going to be laying low for a bit. We got, like, 5 shows with Anthrax on the Metal Alliance tour in April at the end, which is cool. John will be doing double duty, so he's going to have tired hands. And then a show in Puerto Rico, and then we head home. My first child is coming in June, so I'm going to be off the road for at least, you know, the next chunk after that. So
congratulations.
Oh, thank you. So and then that's then we're hoping to maybe do something late summer, but definitely something in the fall, you know.
Good. Okay. So,
yep.
All right. Now, I always end interviews with this question, and it's going to put you on the spot here, but you're stuck on a desert island, one album, rest of your life.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
One. Man, you almost have to go. See, I could cheat and try and pull a box that thing, but right. That's not me. Man, it might be Zeppelin 4.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, there's enough variety on it that I think it would at least keep me interested with different vibes. That's the one problem, is after a while you're gonna be like, ooh. Mm-hmm. If you bring Back in Black, you'll be stoked for a while, and then you're like, oh, I just want to hear anything that doesn't have that same distortion.
Right.
So yeah, we'll go with Zeppelin 4.
That's acceptable. I understand that. Mm-hmm. I'll stick with the Clash, London Calling.
That's a good one. It's a double album too, so at least you got two sides, you know. So.
And a really common answer is the Beatles White Album because there's a lot of variety.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I was trying to think of variety. That's where I was trying to go. So that's a good one too. So. You just skip the Ringo songs.
Yeah, well, there aren't too many of those, I guess. All right, that's pretty much the interview. Thank you so much for taking the time out
that. Yeah, man, thanks for spreading the word.
No problem.